What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 45 of the Halving Report podcast with myself, your host, Brad Mines. The price of Bitcoin is just under $60,000, which is up $12,000 from our last episode just a couple of weeks ago. That's a $15,000 difference. The next Bitcoin halving event is predicted to land in March of 2024, cutting that daily supply in half and creating another shock to the market. Today, we have Canadian entertainer Spandy Andy on the show. His YouTube channel has millions of views and is guaranteed to bring a smile to your face. What's more is that he's a big time Bitcoiner and has had real life utilization of cryptocurrencies. Let's get to it. Andy, do you mind just giving us an introduction for those people that don't know who you are?
All right, I am Spandy Andy, legally changed my name to that. And I spent the last 10 years traveling the world performing, street performing. So my story of Bitcoin is quite unique, where I was in countries where I didn't have a bank account, but I needed to take home some of that money that I earned, and Bitcoin was the solution for me. And this started way back in 2014.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's my really quick story. Now I'm, because of COVID, I'm not performing. I've been at home for a year. I'm actually opening up a dance studio and hoping to be a fitness instructor.
Well, hey, I was watching some of your videos yesterday, and you definitely got the fitness part down. I don't know what the move is, but the move where you squat and then you come up with the feet on each way. I don't know what that's called.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I was like, that looks squat. It looks so cool. I tried it, and like my legs were like jello after like three squats. I was just done.
Nice. I didn't start with that dance move when I first started, but yeah, now I do it full time. A lot of people think it's a Russian dance move, which I kind of agree with. It goes with their culture.
So you're Canadian, correct?
Yeah.
Which part of Canada are you from?
So I was born in Red Deer, Alberta, between Calgary and Edmonton. I'm currently in Calgary right now. Okay. And I spent some time in Vancouver as well. So I'm a West Coast guy, but I also lived in Niagara Falls. That's where I met our mutual friend Phil, and him and I chat every day about Bitcoin. We're obsessed.
Yeah. Well, when I see Phil, I hear the stories, some of the topics you guys talk about. Phil and I are always discussing, sure, probably very similar topics. But yeah, so when were you in Niagara Falls?
So 2011, I spent the summer there working at Marineland. And then 2012, I actually came out against the park and was at part of the protest. And then I moved.
I was actually in Calgary for just under 4 years. It's a beautiful city. I love it there. I do miss it being so close to the mountains, the Rockies, and you know, just everything in that city. I feel like it's a younger culture, and people kind of have the similar mentality, very openness and free living. One of the other things that interests me is that you legally changed your name to Spandy Andy, which I didn't realize until I started doing more research on you prior to the show. Why did you make that official? And like, what's the process like? Is that an easy process?
Yeah, so Canada's amazing. First off, it gives you the freedom to change your name. So I love to say that off the bat when I share this story, because not all countries allow it. I mainly honestly did it more for publicity, because I was getting interviewed a lot, and the interviewees would always say, "What's your name?" for the article. And I wanted to promote Spandy Andy, because that's what I was doing. They were interviewing me about why I was dancing in the street or doing what I do, making my videos. And so I just wanted to say my name's Spandy Andy to them. And so I looked into it, and it was the cost of about $300 and a criminal background check, and then you can change your name to anything you want.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. You submit all your old documents. I even had to submit my birth certificate, which was kind of funny. And then I pay like $60 for a new birth certificate. But it's weird, because it's like I have a new birth certificate, even though my name was different at birth. But anyway,
I did it.
It'll be on my tombstone, Spandy Andy.
And what was your original name?
So I was an Anthony Matthew Reimer was my full name, and I was called Andy all my life. So I was actually nicknamed Spandy Andy by someone else. A different performer saw me and coined me Spandy Andy, and it stuck ever since.
Very cool. So I want to dive a little bit into your Bitcoin story a little bit more and how you were first introduced into the space and how did that go and what kind of made you so passionate about the space?
Right. Yeah, I'm so passionate about Bitcoin. Like, it's my lifeblood. It's pretty ridiculous right now. I was even telling people I want to name my child Satoshi. I think that'd be hilarious because like Bitcoin's just so important and my child is very important or will be, right? And I already bought a Bitcoin for my future child because I wanted to make sure they were secured. And anyway, I love Bitcoin for so many reasons. I've been studying it full time for 5 years about. Last bull market, I experienced all the stuff that I'm seeing a lot of people go through now. But, you know, the playing with shit coins, trying to do day trading, you know, all the stuff. But I actually have a computer background in networking, which is a lot of the like technology behind Bitcoin is how the blocks, you know, connect, all the nodes connect together, how the mempool works and how the blockchain is built with the miners. So just understanding that technology has really given me the conviction to trust. I can trust the Bitcoin network more than I can trust anything else right now. I can't trust anybody in this world, like watching the news, reading on the internet. I can't trust, but Bitcoin math, it's the one thing I can trust. And I just love that because money is such an important thing.
You nailed it, right? It's like an open source. And I think you have a unique situation where you're traveling from country to country and it was actually a necessity. Like I talk to people sometimes that are naysayers of Bitcoin and they don't really realize the utility of it. They think it's just a speculation game and there's no actual utility and they don't see the value in it. Whereas for people like yourself, it came in like actually really very practical. So that's super interesting. And I mean, it totally makes sense why, you know, you'd fall in love with it after it gave you that ability, right?
Yeah. So when I was in Scotland at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, I collected all these coins and I didn't have a bank account in Scotland, and traveling with a ton of cash and you don't want to go over borders and stuff. And so it actually was perfect use case. I Google, you know, Bitcoin ATM. I find one in the city, go deposit all my money into it. It sends the Bitcoin onto my phone. And then like when I get home, I was like, wait, I don't want to convert this. I'm keeping this. And I went through another situation where I used it to play poker online when they blocked poker betting in Canada and the US on the internet. Like, I ended up needing Bitcoin for that use case as well. So there is a few different use cases. I've actually helped someone buy drugs with Bitcoin in Texas. So I've helped with the use case all over the place. And I know people are like, when they hear that, right? They're like, yeah, Bitcoin's used for criminals.
Right.
And then it's like, but wait, ask anybody with drugs right now how they paid for it. It's not going to be Bitcoin, right? We all know that whole, it's the dollar that's used for all criminal activity and wars.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, what's your philosophy when it comes to crypto storage? Are you a not your keys, not your coins kind of guy? Or are you a fan of custodial services?
Nice. Good question. I know. I have my brother lost an entire Bitcoin to Quadriga. So I'm in Vancouver. Wow. So I used Quadriga too with my brother, and he kept it on Quadriga only because he's not as computer savvy. So he didn't trust himself with Bitcoin keys. He actually felt safer using the exchange because it's like a login, right? You don't have to remember it or lose it. So anyway, he got burned by that. So he's still going through the trials right now. So he lost a full Bitcoin. So that's always going to bother us for the rest of our lives, knowing how Bitcoin's going to end up here, right? Always knowing, because he doesn't have a full Bitcoin anymore, but he got the confidence to get back in the game and start dollar cost averaging. And I'm so proud of him for doing that, because a lot of people are out of the space because they got burnt too.
I was one of those people. Keep your keys. There you go. I love it. I love the philosophy. Keep your keys, you know?
I had Andreas Antonopoulos. He was my instructor for one of my courses, and he taught that not your keys, not your coins.
Oh, really? Can you tell me more about that?
He teaches a cryptocurrency course through the University of Nicosia, which is just outside of Greece, I guess, but it's an online, I took it online. And he was the instructor, you know, it was a 6-month, 12 module, just going through everything with Bitcoin and exams. And he's just such a good instructor. And he really reiterates, not your keys, not your coins, because it's just full of scams right now in the crypto space. So it's really scary for the average person. So I understand why they probably need maybe these ETFs and stuff. But as I wish everybody could have their own keys. That's the dream, of course.
Yeah. Well, that's great. We, you know, share that philosophy. I know there's some big players in this space that I've spoken to said that people have always kind of relied on third parties for big amounts of wealth. And I kind of understand that too. So at that point, I would, even still, I don't think I'd put all my eggs in one basket anyways. Right. If you want to have some of it there, sure. But you definitely don't want to go one way or the other fully, right? So are you a Bitcoin maxi, or what's your stance on this? What's your allocation?
Well, yeah, no, exactly. I'll be honest. I do hold some other shit coins, but of course I'm 95% Bitcoin. But I did I went back in the day through Litecoin too, and it's like nothing against Litecoin. Sure, it's a visible blockchain. It's you know, it was proof of work mining. It was pretty fair distribution and everything. And then even the leader, you know, Satoshi Lite, whatever, he sold all his coins. So
yeah,
and Doge is cool again because it's more natural too. So I don't mind, and Monero, whatever. But I would never store all my wealth. If I wanted to store my family's wealth for the future for my child, like I am doing that I haven't even conceived yet, I'm going to use Bitcoin, none of these other coins, right? These other coins are for practice. You and me right now, we could send each other Doge, and we could try to create things on the Doge blockchain because it wouldn't cost us anything. So it's just fun practice. But then we come to Bitcoin, and now it's the real deal. And that's why these other coins are kind of, that's the benefit to them I see, is for practicing.
Right. Yeah. It's sorting. Someone else that I talked to said it's betting on technology, whereas betting on Bitcoin's betting on money. I don't know if that resonates with you at all with what you're saying, but yeah, I'm certainly in the same boat as you in terms of what you mentioned for allocation, plus 90% there. A little bit of Ethereum, talking about Ethereum and things that are happening on Ethereum. Did you see the recent record-breaking NFT digital art sale?
So it's funny. I hold a bunch of Ethereum. Sure. So great. If it goes up, it's great. But it bothers me a little bit how its issuance was mainly to it was a pre-mine. It wasn't a fair thing and stuff. So a lot of Ethereum bothers me, but I don't believe it's decentralized either. I can't run an Ethereum node. I run Bitcoin nodes. Mm-hmm. So I have the blockchain right here to verify myself, which I strongly believe in. That's the most important thing. And Ethereum, they're hard forking it again and again and again. So as you can see, I have all these quirms with it, but quirls or whatever they're called, but otherwise, sure, it's interesting. Yes, the NFTs, I would never pay that, but I can't stop others from doing that.
Do you see them hold the digital art pieces holding their value over time? I know some people buy them and then resell them and make tons of money on them, but is that going to be able to, can you keep doing that?
So yeah, that's the thing, right? So that just proves it's 100% speculation. It's just people wanting to make money off of it, which is what the whole ICO bubble was of. Were you there for the ICOs in 2017?
Yeah, I got in fall of 2017. So it was just ICO extravaganza when I got in.
So do you remember CryptoKitties?
Yeah.
Okay, CryptoKitties is so perfect. I just realized this the other day. That was the NFT. You could buy the individual kitty graphic. You were the only one that had that unique NFT kitty. And you could sell it to other people and blend the kitties. And then what happened? Was the Ethereum blockchain, because CryptoKitties got so popular, it got clogged up, which is exactly what's happening now. But instead of it just being kitties, it's kitties and graphics and you know, sports right. cards and stuff, but it's actually the exact same thing repeating itself. Hmm. So I looked into CryptoKitties yesterday and a bunch of the kitties still have values. So to answer your question, it's still like 160 grand for one of these original kitties.
Oh my God. So selling much higher than the original price is what you're saying.
Yeah. So
oh my God. That's
I
wild.
Don't know. I don't have money to throw around like that.
No. Yeah. I think there's, I mean, when I was looking at how many bidders, it didn't seem like there was that many bidders. It seems like there's like a, you know, maybe a few hundred big players betting big yeah. money. What about lending services, BlockFi, you know, Binance staking, things like that, where you kind of lend the coin. Some of them have their own coin. Nice. Some of them don't. Do you partake in that? And that's yeah. kind of ties in with the custody storage thing as well.
Nice. Yeah. You have the best questions. I love this. It's oh, thanks, awesome. Man. Very practical, legit. You know your stuff. It's true. And you said earlier, don't put all your eggs in one basket. And I mm-hmm. have that same belief when it comes to that. So I am a BlockFi user because I don't put all my Bitcoin there, of course. I just put some. And then my Ethereum and my Litecoin, I was like, well, that might as well sit in BlockFi too. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, again, that I have cold storage Bitcoin locked away. That's like the precious thing. And I think that's the most yeah. important thing for everybody to do first. The first mm-hmm. step is to lock away some Satoshis in cold storage. And then after that, I think you can start doing these like BlockFi play arounds and that. That's my belief.
And do you, like when you make your allocation, when you stack sats, do you use like anonymous service like BTMs or do you use things like Coinbase or Canadian Exchange, BitBuy, things like that?
Yeah, so I ended up using a lot of legit ones. So the government knows about a certain amount of my purchases, right? It's like, oh, yeah. gotta be careful here. But
yeah, well, they are going to be cracking down. I mean, you already see, you know, I think Coinbase like sells analytics to the IRS, and I'm sure that's yeah. coming down through the CRA. There's definitely, I'm sure, pretty big fish out there to fry that are actually, you know, laundering and making cash right. and not claim it. Like me and you, we're hodlers, right? So it's not like we're,
yeah,
you know, taking out cash and moving forward on that, but just stacking over time, right? So you're not really complicating.
And honestly,
things.
I had a friend in Ontario that had trouble buying online and he's like, can you just get me $50 worth? And I was like, sure, e-transfer me $50. I bought him 50 because I'm all set. And then he said, and then afterwards it's like, I'm a money transmitter, right?
Yeah.
It was illegal what I did.
But right. Yeah. No,
I'm a small fish.
For sure. And I've been put in that scenario myself more than once too. So I know what it's like. I mean, you don't know. Everything's still so weird right now because I feel like the laws in Canada and I'm pretty sure the US the same way, but you know, it's like a commodity. So if you go from Bitcoin to Ethereum to basic attention token to whatever yeah. else, right? Every single time it's a taxable event, but some people want to use their Bitcoin and crypto to purchase things. So it's like, imagine having to claim your taxes on every single purchase you made with fiat. So like, if you want to treat crypto like fiat, it just doesn't right. work. It just doesn't work with the current laws.
Which was like the whole bear market that ensued. Like that was one of the arguments was that because they created that law in the US as well, mm-hmm. they made it so that it's not usable as a currency. Because like you said, you're not every time you make a purchase with it, then mm-hmm. you would have to do the calculations of what the current market rate is mm-hmm. for your taxes and claim the gains on mm-hmm. it and everything, which just makes it unusable as a currency. So that's why we're really seeing the most important narrative right now is store of value. And then hopefully we can use it as a currency in the future. And then that'll even increase its value even more.
Mm-hmm. Do you see, I mean, Coinbase is obviously, I think, you know, the biggest exchange or one of the biggest exchanges out there. Do you see them, like they have an upcoming IPO that's been highly anticipated. Is that something that interests you?
Yeah, like my dad's a more conservative, traditional investor, I guess you could say. So he's brought that up a few times with me. So we discuss it. But because of our understanding of Bitcoin, I find there's no point of going for the Coinbase IPO because Coinbase has proven that they believe in like the shitcoin casino and they don't even hold that much Bitcoin on their reserve assets. Like it was shown recently that they have like less than Square who just bought in and stuff. So I would rather invest in Square, MicroStrategy, or these companies that I know hold a lot of Bitcoin over Coinbase.
Oh, okay. That's something I didn't know that they don't really hold a lot of reserves. That's
yeah. So for some reason, reason they only kept, like, I think it was 120 million. It's out there in an article. So they're very low on the scale of people that actually own it, like themselves, on their balance sheet, right? In their treasury, or what all these corporations are doing now.
That's pretty interesting. What do you, have any price predictions for the end of the year?
I know, like, it's awesome. Like, I follow probably a lot of the same stuff you do. Like, I'm full on in it, so I can repeat a lot of the fun things as everybody else says. But I'm prepared for there to be a big dump. Like, I'm excited for, like, the big crash that scares everybody, because it's inevitable. There's going to be a scare. I don't know when it'll be, but, you know, I think 100, like, everybody right now, they're just like, oh, well, it's got to go to 100, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe right before 100K, we have that, a 30% or a 40% correction, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm excited for that, because I do play a little bit with the derivatives.
Oh, okay.
So I love to see the panic in the market. So I don't know exactly, like, Bitcoin, it depends. If it goes up really fast, then, you know, there's a really strong crash. But if we actually go sideways for the next 5 months, then we created a really good base, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So those two things are very important. And then that I can help make my decisions as I go. So I have no idea, but yeah. I think the bottom is where Tesla bought at 30,000, right?
I think that's where they bought. That's okay. So you see, like, after hitting the high, which we're thinking, like, near the end of the year here, early 2022, sort of like 2017, is that, you see something mimicking, like?
Yeah. So exactly. It goes up to 200K. Everybody's finally like, oh my God, we can't miss out on Bitcoin. If it went from 100 to 200, of course it's going to 1 million. Everybody knows that. Sell the house, sell everything. Let's do it. We're going Bitcoin. They said it on the news. Mm-hmm.
And then
it's like, they finally do it and the crash back down to like 30 or 50K. And it's like,
oh man, I hope it doesn't go back down that low after the high. I feel like hopefully it'll settle like a little bit higher than that. Do you have any, like, I know, yeah, of course we follow the same, you know, similar people,
and sources. Stock to flow.
Do you have any favorite crypto Twitter follows?
You know, Dan Held is going strong with the double bear market, or what does he call it? The super cycle.
Oh yes, Bitcoin super cycle. That's exciting.
Yes,
I like hearing that.
I know. Like, truthfully, like, I plan to use BlockFi to take out a loan against my crypto. That is now my plan, and that wasn't available until like 2017. So that just shows that the market super cycle thesis could play in effect, because now all the Bitcoiners don't need to sell their Bitcoin to get cash, and like, some of these guys are such. They made such big gains that it doesn't matter if they only get 50% of the collateral when they're doing lending, they're still very comfortable. And then they can buy back their Bitcoin anyway, or let it go, you know.
What do you think the most exciting thing happening in the crypto space, like outside of Bitcoin, like, or maybe the most important company?
Yeah, I know that I'm thankful for the exchanges, because it is hard to get Bitcoin still, even kind of. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, even, you know, someone that wants to buy one Bitcoin today, if they're like, fine, I want one. It's like, all right, well, wire transfers, like, huge fees, 2% at least. So say Bitcoin's at 72 grand, like it is right now, you need to send 75 grand in at least.
Yeah.
So like, people don't realize a lot of this stuff. It's actually even still hard to get Bitcoin. And so I'm thankful for the exchanges for facilitating that purchase, because without them, how do we get it?
Right. And they push user adoption massively, right? I mean,
yeah. Cause like, think if you had to go meet someone, you're in St. Catharines.
Yeah.
So then you'd have to like go downtown there or drive to Toronto and then take cash and send stuff.
No, you don't want to do that down here.
You got the new train though. It should be easy.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, that's the worst case scenario, right? I mean, people, especially with large amounts of money, I mean, you can do it with the BTMs. I don't mind the BTMs, but I feel like regulation's going to be coming down on those because there's just, you can just go there and buy, right? And there's no identification needed.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like Bitcoin is, as long as you follow the rules with Bitcoin, which I know a lot of Bitcoiners hate, but you know, it works. Mm-hmm. The governments will accept it and then it's even better. You know, like it's okay. Yeah. Don't use it for money laundering. It's fine, right? Just use it as an investment because it really is the best way to store your wealth. Like, mm-hmm. and that's allowed. And that's what matters, right? So all these NFTs, it's like, it is cute. And sure, you could get the rare Pokemon NFT and yay, like in the future, you could pass it down to someone or sell it.
Yeah.
And that is fine. But why take the risk if it depends if how important like securing your wealth is?
What are you doing when you're not researching Bitcoin and dancing?
What else? There's no other time left.
That's it. Like, okay. Well, that's a good Bitcoin, answer.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. You know the levels of Bitcoin. I'm sure you've dived down the rabbit hole, right?
Yeah. Well, as much as I can with the technical understanding that I have. Like, I'm not a programmer by any means. I've taken like introductory to like Python and, you know, a little bit more tech savvy than maybe the average bear.
Yeah.
But you know, it's very complex space. I mean, I have some books. I do have Mastering Bitcoin by Andreas, but unless I'm like right. really focusing for a long time, that's a full on course meal right there.
Exactly. And then do you know Safed Hadeen's The Bitcoin Standard? Have you read that?
I just bought that book because I keep hearing people saying it should be a fundamental reading for Bitcoiners.
Yes.
I have other Bitcoin books, but nice. I'm actually just starting that one. Is that one of your favorites?
Yeah, that was my first, and it was the one that got my dad, who's in his 70s, because it doesn't even mention Bitcoin for the first 6 chapters. So it's the education piece on the history of money and how money is a technology that humans have always created. And this is our latest version of it. So that was like such so different than the other book you just spoke of, the Mastering Bitcoin, which is 100% programming. So it's not the history of money whatsoever. So like, yeah, there's so many facets. That's exactly what I mean. And they're important to learn them all. But I think the history of money one and the Bitcoin standard, it really shows you how important it is, the Bitcoin standard, and how exciting of a thing it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And, well, a lot of people say too that before teaching people about Bitcoin, sometimes you just teach them what money is. So the Bitcoin standard is perfect for those types of people that don't understand the current financial system, never let alone trying to learn what Bitcoin is.
So crazy. Trying to understand the current monetary system that the governments are doing, it's like more confusing than Bitcoin in a way. Like,
yes.
The bonds and monetary theory and yield. Yields and treasuries and holy crap.
When you think about it, like Bitcoin replaces a lot of the bank's products that they currently offer, right? So in a way, I would say Bitcoin is much a simpler financial system, transparent. It's not going to change like with the laws and regulations, right? Like people, banks will lobby the governments go one way or another. It changes over the decades. Bitcoin's, there's a fundamental core there that's not going to change, very unlikely to change anyways. Another good one that I read that I just found very interesting, which just kind of helped me understand the history of some of the Bitcoin OGs, like the Winklevoss brothers, was Bitcoin Billionaires.
Nice. I want to read that. I haven't read that. I downloaded that.
So. Oh, did you? It's a really fun read. You learn like the relationship, how Eric Voorhees and Charlie Schrem and the Winklevoss brothers and how they're all like working together back in the day. It's a cool little history story rather than I find like a lot of Bitcoin books are like, you know, what Bitcoin is like kind of over and over again with different ways of saying it, which are good and need. But like Bitcoin Billionaire is a little bit different, which is kind of nice too.
Nice. Okay. I'll for sure do that one next. Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like I said, it's fun to get, it's easy to read through because it's a fun book to read.
Yeah. Cause Charlie Schrem has a podcast too that I like to listen to, and he Untold shares stories. Some of those. Yeah. And he ends up how he ended up in prison from Bitcoin and ran the exchange out of New York. And
the book, that's not really a spoiler, but like, it is kind of eye-opening to like what Charlie Schrem was like back when he was, I think, like 22 years old, trying to run like you know, the biggest Bitcoin exchange in the world. It's quite interesting. And the Winklevoss brothers, who are like, you know, the Harvard State guys, are trying to rely on this, you know, on this type of person, right? Who's just coming into all this money at once and just living that rock star life, you know, smoking the whole shit ton of weed. So it's really fun.
Yeah. You know, the Winklevoss, they're so uptight, but they have been behind Bitcoin for so long that I respect them big time.
Yeah. Yeah. And Roger Ver too. Like, it's interesting how he's always been like one way, and he's always stayed that one certain way with that philosophy of destroying taxes and just
government. Yeah, libertarian.
Yes. Yeah.
So what has that affected you politically, Bitcoin getting involved with it?
Absolutely, man. So I would say, after coming out of Poli Sci at Brock, I was pretty, and I am pretty left-leaning on a lot of issues, but the Bitcoin and libertarian aspect just made me realize, I guess, maybe some things can't be changed. I don't know. I don't know if it's good or bad, or some of the things that changed, but it definitely changed my philosophy, and I have more libertarian ideals that kind of combine with my current ones. Like, I love Bernie Sanders. Like, I think, I don't know if you like him or not, but I think some of the ideas he brings out are awesome. And like, some people call that radical left. But I think the ideal system is no taxes, but I don't think the elite can basically rape its citizens for decades and decades and then not give anything back to them at the end of the day to kind of rebalance. I think redistribution of wealth is healthy for a society, whether obviously done through taxation is not ideal. It'd be better if it could happen more organically.
It's happening through Bitcoin more naturally right now. Like,
exactly.
Transfer of wealth, right?
And that's what really hit me deep. And actually, you know, Bitcoin Cash aside, one of the quotes that really made me passionate about Bitcoin was Roger Ver and how Bitcoin can undermine every government's ability to wage war. And that really spoke to me, because it's true, right? You can't just print endless money to do whatever you want. There's accountability now.
Exactly, dude. It's so huge. I have a crazy little thing. I can talk forever, but I have another really important story that Bitcoin connects with me with.
Please do.
My grandparents are Holocaust survivors. So they came to Canada after losing everything. And like, both their families were murdered, but they both survived in a hospital after concentration camp and then ended up coming to Canada and starting their new life. So they had the stories that they tried to bring some of their wealth with them when their houses were being, you know, taken away from them, and how they had to swallow like diamonds or gold or anything they could. So if Bitcoin was available for them at that time, it could have been used as to protect their family wealth and store it and then bring it across like the border with them, or even hold it in their head for as long as they need to. So like, that was I was like, oh my God, that could have been like, that's a tool for mankind.
Huge tool. So you have two personal stories where kind of Bitcoin touches you personally there. But yeah, and you know what? On that point, just looking back at older people that could have used it, and the people that labored for their entire lives while they could have stacked sats for five in today's world, I feel, my heart bleeds for them, because it sucks if you were born in today's age and you have the tools that were available today, you know, to take advantage of it, right? And I'm jealous of people that are younger than me that are, you know, stacking sats at 20 years old, because these people are going to be financially free at 25 years old and just live the best lives ever. So
It is awesome. It's crazy though. Like, I go to Mexico a lot, and I want to help the people there, like, that are my friends. And like, they're so far from being able to use Bitcoin. Like, they don't even actually use electronic. It's very much peso to peso in all the shops. Mm-hmm. Right. And like, even ATMs are a pain in the ass there with like huge fees. So they try not to even touch the system at all, but they're just all using pesos that are getting devalued. And it's really sad. Like, how can I help them with Bitcoin? They're living day to day. How can they stack sats? Right? It's not realistic.
Well, I think even showing them the door is super important, and I'm sure you do that all the time, just by saying, you know, wearing that t-shirt even, you know what I mean? You're showing people the door. And I think that's important to note, is that you can't take people from the start to the finish line. You can kind of just show them the start, and they have to kind of take things into their own hands at the end of of the day.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm very willing to help. If people are willing to learn.
Yeah.
Most Bitcoiners I know are like, for sure, I'll help you buy Bitcoin, right?
Totally. Isn't that awesome? Bitcoin's like, it's such a teacher. Yeah. It's crazy. Like, will all Bitcoiners want to help each other? And like, none of them really have time for shitcoiners, most of the big ones. They're like, even Satoshi wrote, like, if you don't get it, I don't have time to explain it.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys, they can't just keep arguing the electricity thing. Like, we're on Zoom using electricity and they have the Zoom corporate towers that they built. And like, what are we calculating electricity use for everything?
My last episode, I had a guy who works for with a mining pool, and we talked a lot about electricity and Bitcoin's consumption. And he says there, I forget what the name of the scale, but it's some Russian study measures society based on the amount of energy that they use. And the more energy being used is actually better, he says, for one. So he's like, I don't argue that Bitcoin takes more energy use if it were not to exist. But he's like, you got to look at the alternative system that we have now. And there's a lot of externalities in that system. Whereas, you know, the script for the MasterCard may only be, you know, a very small file compared to Bitcoin, but there's a lot of other things that go into play in the major financial system that we have. So that was pretty eye-opening to me. And just, you know,
That's a really important one that people are going to need. I told my dad last bull market that the electricity thing was going to come, because it did pop up then as well. So a lot of these arguments are repeats as well.
Right.
And it is good that, people need to be skeptical.
Oh, for sure. For sure. There's always going to be someone. And also, it's a driver for renewable energy too, right?
Yes.
Because it makes people become creative in how they get their energy from. So
here in Alberta, they're gonna try to do that. The flaring is a really popular one people have heard of. You can't use the energy any other way now. They can monetize it. These companies in Alberta are suffering because of oil prices. Now they can actually make a little extra off these flares. So explain that to people. It doesn't cost anything to mine that, because it's already electricity that was there anyway.
The gentleman I had on last show spoke a lot about that too. Andy, I'm gonna leave it open for you for any final comments about crypto, maybe for newcomers, or just words of wisdom for all my listeners, and then maybe just let them know where to follow you.
Well, thanks so much for having me. This is awesome. Love talking Bitcoin. So I can't shut up about it. I'm glad you finally just cut me off. I could keep going. I would tell everybody, do your own research. Cause like, you're like, you always say, don't listen to me. I talk to experts and stuff. That is good. I think we should all be humble, and Bitcoin's like so much bigger. It's like, God, you can't understand it all, right? So be humble to it and come in here wanting to learn and try your best. And Bitcoiners will help you. There's endless resources. There's no excuses in Bitcoin. It's you're the only one holding yourself back. So get out there and learn. Get your first Satoshi.
All right. And where can we follow you?
And follow me. I am Spandy Andy on all the social medias. You'll see all my videos. I don't even talk about Bitcoin in any of my stuff. Bitcoin has changed my life, but I don't like arguing it over and over with people. So I feel like I just said they have to be willing and want to do it themselves. So check me out. Tweet me at Spandy Andy Bitcoin, and we can talk. And I can't wait to celebrate when we break 10,000
we gotta check it. I feel like if it's a new all-time high, we gotta do something.
Not quite. We're right there.
I'm just refreshing here. Where are we at?
Double check. It looks like we had a slight dip.
Smash the buy. I'll buy if you buy.
Nice. See my Apple Watch?
Nice, that's beautiful.
I have the price is always on the front right there.
That's super cool. It just came up and said Brad Mines podcast too. That's awesome.
Nice.
I want to get
We're on.
I also want to get one of those clocks that just displays the Bitcoin price.
The block. Oh, yeah. The price. Yeah, oh, is there a price clock?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a few of them. I forget the website, but I follow them on Twitter. Next time I come across them, I'll definitely tag you in it.
Yeah. Send me it.
Thanks for your time, Andy. It's nice meeting you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Thank you all for listening to episode 45 of the Having Report podcast. Show us some love by liking, following, subscribing to the show, and we'll see you back next time.